At 26 minutes after the hour, we're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don, a member of the board at Creation Moments. He's a biochemist. I almost said by trade, by vocation, by training. That would be better, wouldn't it? Because right now, he's a vintner. He's applying his biochemistry knowledge not to fighting. Well, he is actually doing a lot to fight COVID. We've covered some very important information on COVID and vaccines and masks and so forth from the scientific viewpoint. But today, Don, we're back to the core issues of creation and what life was like in the Garden of Eden. David Allen Punt is here too, by the way. He'll be listening intently and
could be breathing heavily in the background.
That too. Don, first of all, Don's in Garden Valley. How are things in Garden Valley? How are things in the vineyard today? Kind of quiet, probably.
Yes, we've been having sunny days, and it's been warm, but I think it's going to be a little cooler this week as we start to head into the fall. We're still got 94 degrees projected for today, and even later this week, it's going back up to 97.
Yeah, that is such a pretty area, too. I've driven through there a number of times, visited Don at the Grape Ranch there in Garden Valley, and just a very impressive. Before coming to Texas, I never knew there was a place that pretty in Texas. I always thought of Texas as West Texas,
which is West, a whole different thing. Dry, a lot of horny toads. And lizards.
Yeah, snakes and things that slither. Yeah.
Yeah, the only horny toads you can find here are in the pet shops.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. they keep them as pets? Oh, okay.
I used to have one.
Cuddle up to a horny
really?
Toad and name
when
him
I was
Fred.
In Louisiana, yeah.
Oh, was that right?
They were, it was just an interesting...
One of those
an
things
interesting,
to do.
Different, amphibian.
I have a granddaughter who is into amphibians, and she's got a couple of lizards. One's a gecko, and the other one, I don't know what the other one is, but they all look alike to me. So she's got them in the big box there, and she drags them out now and then. And they were on a trip. They live in South Florida, and they went on a trip just recently, and they sent back a picture of her holding a small alligator.
Uh-huh.
So they
there
said,
oh, there's a cuddly critter, yeah.
This one will get really big.
Yes. Yeah, but alligators don't make good pets.
No.
Don, I have a hypothetical question for you. Let me set the scene. It's the Garden of Eden before the fall. At this point, Adam and Eve have done nothing wrong. They're tending the garden. They've named the animals. They're picking fruit. And there's a mouse running through the underbrush. When all of a sudden, an elephant walks by and steps on the mouse. Did that mouse die or not?
Did the mouse die? We usually
think of death in the death in the garden as animals eating other animals, using life forms as a food supply. I'm just wondering, now this is an article from the Institute for Creation Research that asked the question, was there animal death before the fall? So was there? And is accidental death the same as being eaten?
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, what is the, of course, the Bible is clear about what the result of sin is. And, the result of sin is death. You shall not eat of the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. If you do eat of it, you shall surely die, Genesis 2:17. And so, the question is, does that verse, as well as a similar verse in Romans 5:12, refer to only human death? Or does it also apply to animal death? So was sin only supposed to apply to man, or does it also apply to everything, all creation? And, of course, there's other scriptures that talk about all creation, like in Romans, Paul talks about the creation groaning as a result of the fall. and that's all creation. So it gives you the idea that, at least as far as Paul was concerned, the result of the fall had a widespread, if not galactic, cause. And I mean, it caused things to start to decay when the fall occurred.
Would it be fair to say that sin was contagious, or that it was uniformly distributed through the whole creation when the steward, the appointed steward, man, corrupted himself?
Yes, it's because death is so integral with this concept of sin. And so if you make the assumption and say, well, you know, we have fossils, and the fossil record is millions of years old, and so the fossils had to be millions of years old, and being millions of years old, then that means that, the animals had to be dying before man even showed up on the scene, because we know that man isn't, you know, millions of years old. Civilization isn't millions of years, tens of thousands at the most. And so you want to run into this dichotomy that is against, really, the concept that the wages of sin is death. And so that animals, since they're preserved as fossils, you have to have a dead animal is encapsulated in sedimentary rock, which we'll talk about a little later. But since we do have these fossils, then therefore death had to occur. And the question then is, when were the animals encapsulated in this sedimentary mud? It started off being mud and then later turned to rock. And of course, you know, a young Earth creationist has, and if you read, you know, Genesis, you understand that that was the result of the flood, a global flood, which, of course, was a result of sin. And so the flood, which happened, you know, sometime after Adam and Eve, took a bite of whatever fruit was on the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, that indeed, you had some time, and then man multiplied on the face of the earth, and he was kicked out. Adam and Eve were kicked out of the garden, and because in the midst of the garden was the tree of life, which meant that they would have lived forever had they stayed in the garden. So the other thing that we get from Genesis is that after God created the earth and created the universe and all that is in it, he said it was very good. After he created man, it was very good. And that term "very good" means perfect. So they were perfect conditions for man to live, animals to live. Animals were not going to die, and man was not going to die. And but when he fell, then you start having a problem, because evil, excuse me, bringing evil into the world, then man was going to start, you know, killing himself, and then, of course, you know, killing animals. And so the direct result then of the fall is that death occurred. Now, if you think that, okay, animals had to die before man, then what you're really doing is diluting the gospel message, because clearly it diffuses, if you will, the result of sin, or the consequences of sin, I should say. And so you dilute that by saying, oh, there was death before, and now man just happens to die because, and oh, by the way, he didn't die immediately. And so the scripture isn't completely accurate when you say, you know, in Genesis that it says that if you eat of the fruit, you shall surely die on that day, you shall surely die. Well, you know, they physically didn't die. Obviously, their spirits died. Something happened to them the spiritual side of things. But they didn't physically die. Obviously, Adam lived, to be more than 900 years old. So death didn't come right away. But the introduction of death started at that time.
Now, let me stake in another question here. Was it true then that before the fall, plants, animals, humans came into the world through a natural process, whether it's a seed germinating in the ground and growing into a flower, or an animal giving birth, a human giving birth, and the young would mature and simply remain as mature plants, animals, humans, and not age but not die. Is that logical?
Well, it's logical, certainly, for, the animals and man. Now, plants, plants were the food for man and animals. There was no, animals didn't eat other animals, and man didn't eat animals before the fall. And God, tells them that this is what you're going to eat. You're going to eat seeds. You're going to eat, fruit. You're going to eat the leaves of vegetation, but you're not going to eat each other. so you didn't. So the plants then became food, if you will, for man and all of the animals.
So there were three divisions: animal, vegetable, and mineral. But only the animal category involves life. In other words, you can't really say that a plant is living or that it dies. It simply is and has a life cycle.
Well, no, plants do live. I mean, I would say that, a plant is alive. I mean, if you've ever tried to plant a garden, you know that, okay, this plant is thriving and this one is dying for some reason.
I've killed many of them, yeah.
Yeah, so plants, and just because you eat the leaves doesn't mean that the plant dies. You can, for example, you can have spinach or you can have celery, and you can take a stalk of celery, and the plant is still quite viable, even after you've taken a stalk of celery. So it doesn't necessarily mean that the plant, completely died because you happen to be eating the leaves or picking the nuts, from the tree and that type of thing. Plants are a little bit in different category because obviously they were food for the animals and
that would imply that animals did not eat other animals before the fall.
Exactly. They didn't. So if animals didn't eat other animals, then what's killing off the animals? And if they're living in a perfect environment, what's killing off the animals? Mm-hmm. Well, nothing is killing off the animals. They're just growing bigger and bigger and bigger. And, of course, we have the results from the flood and from all of the fossils and the buried animals that we find as to how large some of these animals really, really got. And like I said, they were living in a perfect environment. Even after the fall, they were living in a perfect environment. But the other point one must mention is that of shedding of blood. So if you killed an animal, the blood would be shed. And doing that before the fall, again, would not only minimize the result of sin, if you will, but it's the shedding of blood that we have atonement from sin. And, of course, the ultimate shedding of the blood was Jesus' sacrifice on the cross.
Well, the shedding of animal blood then would be symbolic of that, but not atoning in any way.
Yes, exactly.
So if you sacrifice a goat at the altar, it's simply symbolic. the issue of blood has nothing to do with salvation, despite the claims of the sacrificial instruments. I mean, the people that set up that system. So animal sacrifice itself, or even animal eating animals, has nothing to do with salvation. But as humans, we observe that, we're repelled by it. It's an awful thing to watch for most human beings, and therefore is a lesson of some kind. Is that correct?
Yes, it's a lesson. It's a lesson, the ultimate lesson in all of that. Even when God said, you gotta sacrifice animals. He told Israel and the Israelites that they had to sacrifice animals, and here's how you do it. And the priests are the ones that sacrifice the animals, and they put the blood on the altar, if you will, and all of that was to show how horrible sin is. That the killing, for example, of an innocent animal, and they basically were slitting the throats of the animals, and blood would gush out if you did that. So it's a really horrible thing to witness. And in God's point was, this is indeed horrible. Your sin is horrible, and so therefore it requires a horrible act, if you will, in order to remit your sins. And so there was all kinds of symbolism in the shedding of blood in the Old Testament with the animals, and obviously all of it pointing to God's own son being sacrificed and his shedding of blood for the ultimate atonement of sin.
Were there any animals made into fossils before the flood?
No. No, because if an animal dies, and this, let's assume maybe an animal did die, but, death, as I said, was a result of the, well, of course, after the fall, then you did have animals dying, and you did have, one animal probably eating another animal after the fall, but before the fall, no. And so the animals that died, though, it would be like if, here in Texas, we have a lot of pigs and a lot of wild pigs. And if you shoot a wild pig and you leave it in the back of your property, for example, it won't take long before that animal is eaten up by all kinds of things, ants and foxes and coyotes, and you go back in a couple of days, and you may have some bones left, but you may not have anything left after shooting that, shooting the pig. And so an animal that, died would be, consumed rather quickly by either other animals or insects, and bacteria and mold and everything that, happens when something dies and decays. That decay would have been fast, and you wouldn't have any remains left to discover, if you will, as a fossil. In order for it to be fossilized into, either an imprint, it has to be covered very quickly in mud. For example, and so you have to isolate the oxygen, because even oxygen hitting a dead animal is going to start breaking down the tissue. And so these animals then that we see in the fossil record are a direct result of the flood.
A second. Could there not have been local flooding Before the great flood that would have resulted in some accumulation of fossils, animals that were covered quickly in sediment and fossilized prior to the great flood? That's a minor question,
well,
I understand.
There's no indication that there was any type of flooding before the great flood, because the people that were outside the ark had no concept of that much water. I mean, they you know, when Adam and Eve, for example, were in the garden, it says that mist came up out of the earth, and that's what watered the garden. So they didn't even have rain.
That's true. So we're assuming that both people and animals and plant matter were prior to the Great Flood were localized, a rather small area of Pangaea. Is that correct?
Yes. Hmm. Yeah. I mean, a small area. I mean, the Pangaea was pretty big because it's, you know, the pieces, when Pangaea broke up, it broke up into all the continents we have today.
It's just hard to imagine a huge landmass where there isn't some flooding, some snowfall, some natural catastrophe that would result in fossils. But you're saying not until the flood, which means the fossils we do see, most of which had to have resulted from the Great Flood.
That's correct. And even, you know, even today, if an animal or, you know, plant dies, I mean, you have perfectly formed leaves, for example, that we have fossil records of. And that's not going to happen, you know, if a leaf just falls to the ground and you're waiting for some dust to cover it. That's not going to happen. I mean, you're not going to have an imprint of that leaf. That leaf is going to long before, you know, degrade into nothing. But in order to get a rock implant of the leaf, it has to be buried in a very quick manner in rushing mud, basically, that, you know, really points to the flood and points to the catastrophe that it was and the amount of flowing mud, if you will, that there was following the flood.
Now, the general timeline, as I understand it, and we've talked about this in the past, there was creation. Roughly 2,000 years later was the Great Flood, and here we are 4,000 years downstream from that. We're finding fossils and bones. Does that mean that bones that were dinosaur bones, for example, that are unearthed in Montana, are younger than the flood?
Are younger? No, they're older than the flood, yes.
They've happened. In other words, these animals died after the flood at some point.
After the flood. Mm-hmm. They died after the flood. They were living in this, you know, of course, where do those animals probably came from? Being released from the ark, and then they multiplied on the face of the earth, and then they roamed to various continents, in this case to the Americas, through the Bering Strait, after the flood, the other event that occurred was the Ice Age, or mini ice ages, if you will, rapidly occurring. And, you know, we talked about this before, and that the waters were warm because it was a temperate climate before the flood. And then when the flood happened and then the land masses started breaking up, you had a tremendous amount of volcanic activity, which would send up dust into the atmosphere, which would block the sun. You had warm waters, you had the sun being blocked, and then
this article makes the point also that there were new seabeds being formed with molten lava being released from underneath, which would have warmed the oceans to some degree as well. So all these different factors changing the climate while this massive continent of Pangaea was breaking apart and the chunks floating apart to what we see today. But at that point, there must have been local natural catastrophes that resulted in fossils and normal routine animal death that resulted in bones. Is it fair to say the fossils are older? Well, I can't say that. Fossils are not necessarily older than bones, but bones can't be as old as the flood.
Well, what you have in, let's say, Montana, for example, in these areas where, you know, there's dinosaurs, they aren't preserved in rock. They're in mud layers. So those, for example, kind of roamed in that area because there was a warmer climate up in that area due to the winds coming off of the ocean that went across the continent. And so those animals, you know, migrated to that area, escaping the ice age and all of the cold that was happening. So they didn't necessarily get buried, if you will, due to rushing mud. The fossils that you see in, you know, you have a rock layer, a mud layer, for example, a rock layer, and you see a leaf, or you see a fish, or you see a fish eating another fish. Those type of fossils, those were buried probably alive in the rushing mud that was coming across the land masses as the tsunamis were, you know, hitting the shores of these the Pangaea breaking apart. And but those are different than the, in essence, post-flood events that occurred, where you had the animals, you know, thriving and living in these zones. And then as things started to cool down, especially as the water started to cool down, because what happens with the when water evaporates, the water temperature drops. And so the water temperature was dropping, the climate was changing and getting colder, and now it turned from a wet environment into a dry environment, and we get such things as massive, massive dust storms in these warmer regions, which bury animals alive. And that's why we have, you know, the woolly mammoth, for example, we have them standing up, and with food in their you know, digestive systems, mm-hmm. Because of these massive dust storms that happened.
Skin and bones and even things they had just eaten, so death must have come quickly to them. My understanding is that a fossil is not a body. It's not a leaf. It's not an animal body. It's kind of like a sculpture created by minerals that have replaced the organic material in the plant or the animal. How long does it take to make a fossil? I know the animal has to be covered quickly. We covered that many times by sediment, and then the fossilizing process begins. But can you have a fossil in a day or a week or a decade? How long does it take to make a fossil?
Oh, it depends on how warm the water is. And
those variables.
You know,
yeah.
Of course, you know, a post-flood water would have a lot of minerals in it, due to the volcanic activity that was occurring. So it would probably, you know, I'm just venturing a guess. It would probably take, you know, probably tens of years. It's not thousands and thousands of years. It's not in a day, obviously. But
do we have fossils
over a relatively short period of time?
Do we have fossils that are dated as young? You know, science is always talking about old things and often misrepresenting the actual age because of their philosophy of evolution and so forth. But does anybody, any fossils turn, oh, this is 20 years old? Or they, I don't know that you would have access or knowledge of this, but how many young fossils are there out there and how young are they?
There's a website that says that soft tissue of shrimp with calcium phosphate decomposition can start in 48 weeks and then possibly leading to fossilization.
Okay,
so it's relatively less than thousands of years.
Well, but to be a fossil, the critter or the plant can't decompose first. It's got to be intact to see the kinds of things we see in the fossil layer, which looks like a representation of the leaf or the animal.
Mm-hmm. Right, the mineralization of whatever it is, the organism, whatever it is, whether it's plant or animal, would take relatively, like I said, relatively short period of time. Now, we do have experiments going on even as we speak today, and that is Mount St. Helens. And in the lake, there are many, many of the trees that were on the side of Mount St. Helens when all the water melted, or the snow melted, that was on top of the mountain, and it came rushing down the side of the mountain. Then you had Mirror Lake, which was at the bottom of the mountain, that was covered with these trees. And those are in the process, or have been, some of them have been fossilized as they sunk down to the bottom of Mirror Lake. And, of course, the heavier side of the tree, which is the trunk, the lower part of the trunk of the tree, would sink first as it got saturated with water, and then the lighter part would be standing upright. So we have in Mirror Lake these examples of fossilizing trees that are happening in the lake as a result of the Mount St. Helens,
which would be the same as petrified, same meaning as fossilized.
Yeah, right? Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. The trees are being petrified in the Mirror Lake. So the things that you need in order for petrification to occur is, one, you need water with a lot of mineral, and you need water. I mean, without water, you're not going to get petrified trees, for example. And so petrified forests in areas where we find petrified trees, they had to be submerged in water for a period of time for that petrification to take place. Another evidence of the global flood.
So the long and the short of this, biblically speaking, is that there was no animal death before the fall. After the fall, yes. And that's the answer to the basic question posed in this ICR article. Animal death before the fall? No, apparently not. At least not according to what the Bible says. And if you look at the whole story as you presented it here today, it's hard to believe anything else.
Well, I mean, you have to, like we've said many, many times before, Genesis is the book of the beginnings, but it is also a historical document. So we can look at Genesis and look at other areas of Scripture to help us unravel some of these mysteries, if you will.
Mm. Well, we learned something today. And I guess the best place to start is Genesis. If you have doubts, questions, because it talks about plants being destined or created as food for animals and humans. And it talks about death, and it talks about sin. And you weave the whole story together, and apparently no animal death before the fall. That would be consistent with what the Bible tells us. I might recommend to you creationmoments.com, that website, Creation Moments. Don, by the way, a member of the board of Creation Moments, has a lot of information, scientific information, on the biblical story of creation. You can link to it from our website at brokenroadradio.com, or go directly to creationmoments.com. Take a look at what they have there. You can learn a whole lot, and you can dazzle your coworkers around the water cooler at lunch. I think that would be a good thing to do. Don, thanks very much. Don Clark again from Garden Valley, Texas. And next week, I think we can tackle this Federalist article on the politics of evolution. It should be interesting.
Oh, there you go.
Let's do that.
Yes, indeed.
Let's do that. We'll see you then. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks so much, Don.
Okay.
Thanks, Don.
Y'all have a great week.
You too.